Okay, I'll show results from pure N-body simulations of CDM halos. This is just to illustrate the range of halos that form in a SUSY CDM universe. So this is a galaxy cluster on megaparsec scales, and these would be the smallest halos in the SUSY CDM universe, which are about Earth's mass. And I will concentrate on this end of this huge range of scales. I will talk about clusters and galaxy halos. This is work done with Ben Moore and Joachim Stadel at the University of Zurich. I will first summarize some results of these high-resolution simulations, and the second part will be about some work in progress, how we try to say something about the ionization epoch from these pure N-body simulations. So the introduction is just CDM is the component of the universe that dominates structure formation. So we need to simulate this dark matter component if we want to understand structure formation. The properties of large-scale structure, like in this picture, are well understood already and are considered a major success of CDM. The smaller scale or inner properties of halos, it is well known that N of W or steeper profiles seem to fit the density profiles of these halos, that the concentration of these halos reflects the time of formation. So the smaller things that form earlier are typically more concentrated. And the inner profiles of relaxed systems probably do not depend on mass. And another thing is that one sees in these simulations is that one has a large abundance of subhalos. So many things are already known in this field. So why do we still do N-body simulations at very high resolution? So the inner density profile, for example, is not well resolved yet. This is interesting just for theoretical reason. What would be the result of such a cold hierarchical collapse? One can also apply it to galaxy rotation curves, strong lensing, or to the dark matter annihilation center from the galactic center, but always with caution. That's this red star. Because, of course, the baryons that cool in these halos and the stars that form the feedback and all that can alter the results. But probably if one would find a cusp in these inner profiles, it would remain. It would probably have to be read as a lower limit of density, which later with the baryons could be adiabatically contracted. I don't think there's a realistic way how baryonic and gas physics could destroy an inner cusp. Also, the subhalo inner structure is poorly resolved, poorly known yet. Are they cuspy too, or are they shallower? This could be important for the rotation curves of satellite galaxies, the dwarf satellites, and also for dark matter annihilation from the substructures. Then the abundance and spatial distribution is well known on the higher mass end of substructure, but it's not clear how this continues further down.
But actually, that for the two things, you don't have a star, you also
need a star. I would argue that.
Yeah, so for the dark matter annihilation, you certainly at least have to take the adiabatic contraction
effect. Yes, I have a star here from the galactic center. Mm-hmm. But there could be annihilation also from million solar mass halos, which do not have lots of baryons.
For the anomalous flex stations, I would strongly argue that you have to take baryons into account.
Okay, it depends on which scale they're on. Maybe they're on 10 to 5 solar mass, and then it's. They're below the Jeans mass. So we use the graphics code to set up refined initial conditions, and we solve these gravitational interactions between these particles with PKD graph, written by Joachim Stadel. The main limitation of this method is numerical relaxation. CDM is considered a collisionless fluid just because of the large numbers of particles in a real CDM halo. The relaxation time is huge, like 10 to 65 years, which is much bigger than the relaxation time of a numerical CDM halo. So there were claims that what we are doing is actually similar, like simulating a colony of ants using a few elephants. And people were saying that all these N-body results have not much to do with real CDM structures. But I argue that it's not that bad. There are some problems due to relaxation, but just in very special, like in the very central regions, and not everywhere. So the relaxation time in a simulated halo is as large as the Hubble time as soon as we have 5,000 particles inside this halo. If we look at local relaxation time, it is one Hubble time at about 1% of the real radius if we have 1 million particles inside the halo. So this could suggest that one has a resolved radius which scales about like 1/√ number of particles. But one has to consider also relaxation that happens earlier in the first structures that are resolved. So it is enhanced. One has more relaxation than what one would expect just from the final structure. So we quantified the relaxation in the cosmological simulation using just a local counter attached to each particle, which uses a Fock-Planck type estimate of the local relaxation time, and it just measures the age or the amount of relaxation at each point. And if you plot a cluster at, in density or in relaxation, we see which parts of the simulations are not perfectly collisionless. So we see in the substructure centers, we have lots of relaxation. And of course, in the core of the halo, we have lots of relaxation. That's where the phase space densities are highest today and also accumulated over the whole run. So we see it is still an issue, but we see that also that if we do the same cluster at high resolution, this relaxation, degree of relaxation goes down slowly with the number of particles. That must not essentially be the case, because if one uses more particles, one has earlier structures resolved, again with the same small numbers of particles. But we found that it goes down, so one can really do convergence tests. Using more particles should be a better representation of CDM. So we go to very large numbers of particles with this standard refinement technique. One first runs such a uniform resolution cube like this part here, identifies clusters, goes back to the initial conditions, and makes new refined initial conditions. And like this, we simulated six clusters with numbers of particles between 6 and 25 million inside of the real radius. We use multi-stepping, so there are time steps that are 10 to 5 times smaller than the Hubble time in the innermost part. And we have high force resolution, so these are the highest resolution cluster halos at the moment. All right, this will be a movie. I have to go to the... to make it work. Okay. So here I just cut out the sphere of 6 convolutional megaparsecs of the whole simulation. The whole box is 300 megaparsecs, so this is a part of the high resolution region. It's plotted in physical coordinates, and it starts at redshift 10. The simulation actually started earlier at redshift 40. The densities are also in physical units. So we see how this sphere expands and how the first structures form, and then these are the main progenitors of this cluster. They now come together and will merge. I should probably get a faster laptop. It's too big. And now at the end, we zoom into the system. We see many subhalos. We see still the two cores. The merger is not really finished at this output, so this looks a bit like the coma cluster. And now we can look at the density profiles at different resolutions. Here I plot density profiles of a series of simulations of the same cluster with 0.2 to 14 million. One sees that they're quite similar, so they have converged in the outer part. However, in the inner part, they still get denser with resolution. And the radius which has converged scales about like n to minus 1/3. So it goes in quite slowly. So one needs many more particles if one wants to resolve like half of the radius. So to resolve half of a given radius, one needs about 8 times more particles. The density profiles can be fitted with the NFW profiles or with the profile proposed by Moore et al. And one sees that both are not very good fits in the center. One sees it better in the residuals. These are the residuals of the NFW profile. These typically underestimate the inner densities, whereas the Moore profile overestimates the inner densities, and the errors are quite large, so like 20%. So one can try other functions. This function was proposed by Navarro et al. It fits much better, but it should, because it has also one additional free parameter. This is a function that turns over to a constant density inner core. And the other, the red plot, which also fits very good, is a generalized NFW profile, where I allow the inner slope to be different from minus 1. And these fits typically have a bit steeper inner slopes than minus 1. So these are comparable profiles from the number of free parameters they have, and they are all equally good fits.
This is a minus
1.2 is like the mean slope. And this is a comparison with other groups using other codes, other initial conditions. The density profiles are all overlapping. Here I plot the logarithmic slopes against radius. Also, one sees the scatter between the different clusters are larger than differences between the groups. So the black ones are ours, and the other very high resolution ones are Fukushige et al. Made on the GRAPE special purpose machine. And they are quite similar, so we can be quite confident that we do the gravity part right. So we can. Yes. In this case, where we have an ongoing merger, we evolved the system a bit into the future to let it finish the merger. So these are all our six clusters profile here. They are all done for relaxed systems, so where we don't have any, where you optically visually don't see anything left from the merger recently had. And the other groups do the same. They also plot profiles for relaxed systems. Yes, I think it's direct summation for the locally and tree for the.
Did it actually like in the past multiple method to create a neighborhood for a number of parties at the same time, and then load that neighborhood onto the grid and to support parties with the grid.
Okay, something else. Pierre asked about the inner slope. It's really hard to say this is the inner slope because you don't see any constant inner slope. At this resolution, you don't see an inner slope. It just gets shallower as you get further in. So that's what I just said. We don't know if it's chord or cusped in the center at this resolution. So we have to go to even higher resolution than these. It gets very expensive. And since we're only interested in the inner part, we try a different thing. Well, we try just a trick. We make the high resolution region much smaller. We just resolve this part of the universe where most of the inner particles come from. And we did this first with a 6 million cluster, which we have fully refined. And then we run it again with smaller refinement regions. And we get exactly the same profile, but with 10 times less CPU time. So we do, using the same regions, we do 130 million effective particles inside the radius version. It's still running. it's now at this redshift, 0.8, and this is the density profile of all the particles, and the red particles are the heavy particles, which mix up a bit with the high-resolution particles. But they have softenings which are about of this scale. So we are confident that these heavy particles going through the core do not destroy anything in the inner part. And actually, we've seen that it works in this other cluster. So for this problem, it seems to be possible to have multiple mass particles inside the real radius. And now that's the density profile of this high-resolution run at this same redshift. This is the logarithmic slope as a function of radius. This is about the resolved scale. At the 20 million particle resolution, it was just on the blue curve, like on this Navarro profile that keeps getting shallower with radius. And now it has come down from the blue one to the black one. And we see some indication that it's now really having a constant inner core. In this case, it has a slope of about 1.2. And this peculiar system was just one of the mean, was not the steepest, not the shallowest of our six clusters, so this could be the average cluster profile. Okay, now a few things about substructure. Again, when the densities in the inner part get higher with high resolution, then this makes the same happens with the substructure. And this makes them more resistant against disruption. We see that substructure has converged. That's what Matthias pointed out this morning. You don't get more substructure here, where when you get to higher resolution, you just resolve further down. The question is just how many particles you need to have a substructure sample complete. When you plot it down to the number of subhalos down to 10 particles, for example, in this run, and compare it with a higher resolution run, you see that at 10 particles, it has not converged. So here you really have a factor of two more subhalos. You need to go to about 100 or more particles to have a complete sample of subhalos. Then the number density of galaxies in a cluster. Compare it with the. No, we have not done that.
Okay, yeah. Well, you can explain, I think the question is, you can explain in a cluster, you can explain the observed distribution of galaxy masses as a function of radius from the cluster. So, in other words, you do the same thing, but just on bigger scale. Would you find that your embodied simulation agrees with the data?
One difference already is that the substructures are more extended, so they don't have an NFW like number density profile. That's just on the next slide, I guess. That's this one. That's the number density profile of the dark matter, and the number density profile of the clusters is much shallower, so it's hard to. And the galaxy in a cluster, they do something like this. So if you just select by final mass, you cannot one-to-one compare subhalos and cluster galaxies. Maybe it gets a bit better if you select by mass of the subhalo as it falls into the system. But it doesn't go completely away. We just don't have, we have hardly any substructure in the inner 10%. And rich clusters have galaxies in the inner 10%. It's hard to compare. So these are our cumulative mass functions now of all six high-resolution clusters. They're quite steep. There's some scatter. They're close to m to minus 1. So there are lots of subhalos. Because we have a large number of these, we have good statistics to get the velocities. We see that they move, on average, faster than the dark matter background. So this is the line of sight velocity dispersion. of the subhalos, and this is line of sight velocity dispersions of the particles. We also see that the velocity distribution is very different in shape, so it's not Maxwellian. We miss many of the slow galaxies, well, slow subhalos. You see this in line of sight velocity, I'll see the same in three-dimensional velocity. I don't have a plot for the inner density profiles of the subhalos, but as in the resolved range, they are very similar to the field halos, so they are still NFW-like and cuspy. We also see, when we trace the orbits of these subhalos, that they are quite complicated, quite diverse, and they can, for example, extend out to 3 virial radii. So there are things that today are well outside the cluster, but have passed within the inner 50% of the cluster earlier.
Do we have observation data to compare with that?
This one?
No, either of the two plots you're showing, the velocity distribution.
Yeah, the problem is.
Or it would be something like coma, or so there's 1,000 galaxies or something.
You could do it in coma, or for example, von der Meyl had a paper where he did it for the CNOC.
Yeah.
He just stacked together lots of clusters. Okay. They actually found also negative kurtosis, but it's not one-to-one. You cannot really compare it because the subhalos have, for example, different radial distribution than the galaxies. So one first needs to find out which are populated with galaxies and which not, or...
But if they find something, in the drift, they find something similar, galaxies that they are non-Maxwellian?
Yes, they found a similar negative kurtosis and Hermite polynomials in the CNOC galaxy survey. In coma, one could probably do it, but coma is not relaxed, so I don't know. They did it also for coma. Okay, the last point, it's just 3 more slides. That's work in progress. We try to use these simulations for constraining reionization time. Not exactly these, we use galaxy halo simulations with 2 to 4 million particles. Of course, the downside is that we have just dark matter, no gas, we don't really know where the gas goes, where the stars would form. The good thing is that we have a resolution to resolve everything above 10 to 7 solar masses. So we have probably all the progenitors massive enough to form a substantial amount of stars. And also the progenitors that probably form the globular clusters. We make a very simple toy model. We just assume that these metal-poor globular clusters form in small dark matter halos. And we assume that this formation is shut off by reionization. So one has high energy photons that photoevaporate the gas from these small halos. And at reionization, after reionization time, the star formation and globular cluster formation in these halos is stopped. So we just have to mark particles that are in these halos at a given time, and then we can trace them forward to set redshift 0 and see where they end up. The picture is that these marked halos first build up bigger systems, the order of 10 to 10 solar masses, where they start to accrete gas again and form a next generation of stars. These would be the progenitors of the Milky Way and from its satellites in a similar like the way that Kravtsov et al. Presented in a paper this year.
So each globular cluster is a particle for you, right? You don't resolve globular.
No, we don't. So we resolve these halos with about 400 particles, and we mark them entirely.
You resolve the Hoffs.
Mm-hmm.
So the frequency of globular cluster per galaxy is fixed.
How many globular clusters do you put in
it? We don't compare absolute numbers. We just put everything. And just want to trace where this material ends up. It's just to get the dynamics. of this. I can show you the picture.
That it's independent of where you put the globular plastic, in the whole state, or where you put it at the center.
Yes, I mean, it depends a bit. If we assume small mass, like something like 10 to 7, that has just enough gas to make a small globular, then it would form one at the very center.
Yeah.
If we would select bigger halos, then it maybe would form various in some kind of proto-galaxy. But it doesn't really... We're just interested in where the whole bulk of this material ends up in the in final radial.
Suppose the Hall state gets distracted as it falls in the bigger potential. If the globular class, as the globular cluster are in the outside part of the satellite, they are going to be distracted and remain in the halo of the bigger galaxy. While if they're in the center might, you know, while the satellite is losing mass, the center is still going. Carrying it in mm-hmm. globular cluster within itself. So then the fate, in this simple example, the fate of that globular cluster depends on whether it was originally in the center of the satellite or in the halo of the satellite.
That's right, but these small halos, they don't have suffer much dynamical friction, so the stripped material and the material that's still bound is in a similar orbit. So on average, the radial distribution is the same. So we, for example, we marked the entire thing, or we just marked the center. And for the radial profiles I will show, we get exactly the same. So these are the, if you assume it's a redshift 10.5, the formation of metal poor globular cluster stops. We mark these halos and we plot the marked particles, the green ones, in the galaxy today. We see many end up in the inner part of the galaxy. Probably some of these stars go into the bulge. And then there's some halo of stars or globular clusters around the galaxy, and also around the dwarf galaxies. They also get their globular clusters in this model. And one sees that there are no entirely green subhalos. So these very early small subhalos, they are either disrupted here or they build up some bigger satellite. So the globular clusters today would not have an extended halo. They would have maybe some dark matter in the center, but not much. So we can plot the number density profiles of this material. It depends a bit on the mass threshold, we assume. If we mark at redshift 7, and we mark everything above 4 times 10 to 9, we get this number density profile today. If we mark everything above 10 times 10 to 6, we get this one. They're not very different because this is like 3 orders of magnitude in mass.
Is this just where the halos or anything else?
It's just the material where the dark matter ends up.
Even the water doesn't have any
dark
matter.
Yes.
Except
you like the star. You like the star.
Well, we know that the global clusters don't have an extended dark halo. From tattletales. But we don't know if the mass to light ratio is 1 or 10 or. Of course, the global cluster, if it forms at the center of a dark halo, the center is dominated by the stars. So we don't expect huge mass to light ratios in this model either. So there. Yeah, that's the next thing. So this slide just shows it depends slightly on the mass, and it depends strongly on redshift. So now we have a fixed mass of like 2 times 10 to 8, and if we mark at redshift 13, we get this profile. If we mark a redshift 4, we get this profile. So the slope of this material really depends on when we mark. So if we mark the particles early, we get a much more concentrated final distribution. And now these profiles can be fitted with the number density profiles of globular metal poor globular clusters in the Milky Way today. And here I have some examples of things that would fit. If we mark the very small ones, we would have to stop the formation of globular clusters at redshift 13.7 already. Medium masses would be about 10. And 4 times 10 to 9, we get get a redshift of 7.5. These are too small because they don't have even enough baryons, and even if you convert everything to stars, you don't get the global cluster, which has a million stars in it. These are probably quite big because in this halo one could form a dwarf galaxy and have more metal production. So this is probably too late for the metal pool globulars. So we just keep this middle mass, 2 times 10 to 8, and we see that the red one more or less fits the points, which is the Milky Way data for metal pool globulars. And this is the one that was marked at redshift 10.5. Very similar number density profile you get from the halo stars, which would also have about this distribution. One could do the same thing for clusters, and to get a higher frequency of global clusters in CD galaxies, one would have to use a similar time and not an earlier ionization for the higher density environment. And the next step is to do this with other data and maybe compare the kinematics. So the summary, we found some indication that we have steep inner cusps, that we need lots of particles to have a complete subhalo sample. We found large abundances of subhalos. And we found that maybe the number density profile of today's globulars can result from their early formation prior to redshift 10. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions?
Yeah, we don't know any total numbers. We just trace. We'd have to assume how many globulars form in which size of halo, but we don't do that yet. We just mark in this halo could have globulars, and then we see where this material ends up. But we don't have any absolute.
If you could just one, how many? What is the normalization factor that you're missing? If you put one per host halo.
I don't know, but I should check.
Well, an argument that usually is made is that people say an n-body halo is a good model, say, for a rich cluster, and a poor model, say, for the local group, mainly the abundance of substructure being made. That's the argument. However, you just told me that for CNOC, you find a different distribution of galaxies for massive cluster as you find for subhalos in n-body system. So your conclusion would be that an n-body halo is even a bad match of a galaxy cluster.
Yes. If you do the simplest one-to-one, just select subhalos by final mass and connect them to galaxies, then it's a bad model. It is also a bad model if you select by mass at accretion time, but it gets a bit better. Probably what we are really missing are the baryons that form the galaxies in the center and then could survive even without a halo. Our halos just get disrupted at some time at some resolution limit, but an elliptical galaxy could still be there without extended dark halo.
Okay.
If there are no more questions, I thank the speaker again.